Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Roll free record on my count. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Roll A, fade up on A.
Southern Miss to the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Rainy Friday. Golden Eagle fans, listen across the state of Mississippi and wherever you are. It's the Eagle Hour. Luke Johnson, Michael Mergens from the Southern Bancorp Studios in Hattiesburg, and Laurel Patrick McGee will join us later on. The Saints schedule is revealed. A real interesting mid-October date with Sean Payton coming back to the Superdome. We will go down to New Orleans a little later in the program. Bob Getty will join us in the second segment live from the Pete, because last night's game, opening game, with Texas State suspended in the bottom of the eighth inning. It was supposed to be already underway at noon, but weather has pushed it back to a 2 p.m. pickup time. Golden Eagles down 7-5 in the bottom of the eighth inning. First segment of the Eagle Hour brought to you every day by Dickey's Barbecue, located in a community near you. Some of the best smoked meats anywhere, and they will cater any event as well. Go see our friends just outside Turtle Creek Mall in Hattiesburg. Dickey's Barbecue, cooked here, loved everywhere. But what better way to start a Friday edition of the Eagle Hour than to bring on Bobby Hallford in his 39th season, taking the William Carey Crusader baseball team back to Lewiston, Idaho, with their second straight World Series appearance. And, Coach, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Glad to be with you.
Your 39th year, you guys are in the midst of an 11-game winning streak. And what really sparked that was you lost your last home series against Blue Mountain and then have been on a tear. And in the first round of the NAIA Championship, went 3-0, scoring all kinds of runs. It's been a wild ride the last month.
Yeah, you know, it all year long, it's been a kind of an interesting year. We had a great offensive club last year and lost some of those guys, and it was going to be a little different this year. Last year's team hit 98 home runs. We're at about 45 right now. So we knew we were going to have to do it a little different ways. But at that time, some of our better players had a few injuries that kept them out. You know, our catcher missed about half of the season. Our center fielders missed a lot of games with hamstring issues. And our starting second baseman, who was like all-tournament team last year, he's missed about 3 or 4 weeks. And the guy that stepped in for him has been on a tear. So it's just been some of the guys that, you know, were with us last year. The experience that we've had has really paid off down the stretch, and that's what we kept telling them. You know, just hang in there, and when we get people back and everybody starts playing to their capabilities, you know, a lot of good things can happen.
So in the SSAC championship, you go a perfect 4-0, and then you beat Oklahoma Wesleyan, and then you beat Milligan in two different games. This week on Tuesday, 24-5, and then Wednesday, 11-4. One of those guys that has been injured, but has come back is Preston Ratliff, and he plays both sides of the ball. He's a DH, but he's also a pitcher, and I knew it meant a lot to you to get him back.
Yeah, you know, he was our four-hole hitter last year and also one of our top relievers, and he broke his hamate bone. And he was dealing with that in his left hand, and we elected to, you know, kind of just let him pitch and not worry about the hitting. And we were struggling swinging a bat, and he came to me one day and said, "Coach, let me start trying to hit again." They told me that the bone is displaced, it's floating around in there, and if it's not too much pain, I'll play. So we started, you know, getting him back in there, getting him going. And at that point in time, he was thinking about having surgery on it. I said, you know, if you can do anything, let's just, you know, the pitching thing is big for us too. But if you want to start hitting again, and that's what he did. And he's taken off. And that's really solidified our lineup. And a couple of our other guys, Jake Lissette and Billy Thomas, they're two of our better players too. And they were struggling. And so when he came back, it kind of helped them out a little bit, and they went on a tear. So that's been the biggest thing that's helped us. And, of course, our best player, you know, is R.J. Stinson. He's been over 400. He kind of carried us, most of the first half. And then these other guys, started coming around and playing the way they were capable of playing. So it's just made it all kind of come together at one time.
Before we talk about R.J. Stinson, I want to let our listeners know that hamate bone injury, that's the same injury that both Nolan Tucker and Seth Smith had this season. So that was a big deal for you to get back, Ratliff. But, Coach, let's talk about R.J. Stinson, Ferris Award finalist. That's a big deal. Just the people recognizing what he's meant to your team. Right now, he's the first ever carry finalist for the Ferris Award. School records for career at-bats, runs, hits, RBIs, walks, doubles, games played, as well as single season records for at-bats, runs, and hits. I mean, this guy has done it not just this year, but I mean, he's done it several years for the Crusaders.
Yeah, look, he's just a special athlete. If he was on the football field, he'd be a running back. He weighs 220. He's about a 6'1", and he runs a 6'4", 60. He's just an athlete. His dad's a football coach in Marion, Arkansas. He grew up in Pine Bluff, and we're so fortunate to find him at a pro day workout. A guy that we know brought him through here, and he was going to take him to PJC down in Pensacola. I worked him out, and I said, no. I said, he doesn't need to go anywhere else. He's a 4.0. He won the Student Athlete of the Year, the Hallbrook Award in the state of Mississippi. Also, every summer, the last two summers, he's been one of the best players in the Valley League and can play multiple positions. He's just an athlete and just a tremendous hitter. Goes to all fields. He's kind of an old-school type hitter. If he wanted to hit more home runs, he probably could. You know, a lot of times he cuts his swing down, goes the other way. But just a pleasure to have a kid like that. And one of the coaches in the Valley League said he's a once-in-a-lifetime player for a coach in a career. You don't have kids like that come along very often.
350 in 2020, 310 in 2021. He was slacking in 2021, 310. Then he's gone 404, 399, and right now 403. I mean, this is a guy last 3 years batting, you know, Ted Williams style, unbelievable. Coach, let's shift to your schedule over the next several days. You guys getting ready to head back to Lewiston, Idaho, and last year, I just remember around this time and talking to some people up there. It's just a special place. It's very, very unique how the NAIA does the World Series.
You know, the NAIA basically every year, I call it a mini Omaha, because that area up there, Lewiston, Idaho, Clarkson, Washington, you know, they partner together, and the whole year you have about 350 volunteers that work on this. And for the first time since 1998, the Lewis and Clark won't be in it. The NAIA basically said they had to play their way in it, you know, the last 2 years. And they were beaten this year, and they were knocked out of it by Arizona Christian. So it's going to be unique. It's going to be interesting because they do a great job. I mean, there's just so many things they do well out there. And everybody that's been there, just, you know, the experience is fantastic. And but having the host team not there, that's going to be, you know, it's going to help everybody, really. And the NAIA has done a good job of not making teams from strong areas play each other. They're sending the good teams all over the country now, basically just like Division I does in the NCAA. So you're getting the best 10 teams in the country out there every year.
We're visiting with William Carey head baseball coach Bobby Halford. His Crusaders headed to back-to-back World Series, his third as a coach at William Carey, fifth overall for the school. So, Coach, you were telling me off air, you know, there's a lot that goes in. You guys will play next Friday night. You'll play Indiana Southeast, but you guys will travel up there, and there's a lot of events that really go on before the action starts on the diamond.
Yeah, when you get there, you know, you have your practice days on the field and that type thing. But you also, in the community, you know, we go to the elementary schools and that type thing. And last year we went to an elementary school right across the river there in Clarkston, Washington. And our host family, basically, the lady teaches there, and her kids were there. And it's a real neat experience. We'll share with those kids a little bit, possibly read with some of the classes, you know, go to PE with them, eat lunch with them. The next day, you'll have a photo, you know, out there at the field when you do your practice for all your players, and then they have a tremendous 350 to 450 kids clinic the next day, where you'll send six or eight of your players to do a clinic there for about 2 hours, and then you have a nice banquet and the night before, and game started at 8 a.m. and then we'll play the 7:30. which is prime time. It'll be the prime time game against Indiana Southeast. We're the seventh seed, and so we kind of like where we are, and we've been there before. We're used to it, so it's kind of a familiar place for some of these kids. Especially, that was what was what I told our guys about a month ago. I said, guys, you know, we know how to get there. We know you guys have done it before. Let's bank on our experience and our confidence and who we are and how to get there. And they responded.
Coach,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
We had to play Loyola at Tulane because the Zurich Classic uses the facility to park cars and that type of thing where they play their games. And so our guys really played well. We hit 8 home runs in that ballpark, and Stinson hit one over the Jumbotron. So that kind of got us going a little bit too. And we had to win down there. We knew we had to sweep, and we had to do a good job to even be in consideration for an open round host.
Good stuff. Well, Coach, congratulations on making the World Series again. We'll be rooting for you. And you guys be safe and bring home some hardware.
Thank you. You guys do a great job. Thank you so much.
That's William Carey, head baseball coach Bobby Hallford. The Crusaders headed back as the 7 seed to the NAIA World Series. They will take on Indiana Southeast next Friday night in Lewiston, Idaho. We'll step aside on our first break. Bob Getty live from Pete Taylor Park as Eagle Hour continues on a Friday.
Robinson Electric Supply in Laurel is a wholesaler and distributor that has been powering our community for over 20 years. With everything from conduits to tape, tools to home automation devices, if you can think of it, we supply it. All you need to do is talk us through the project at hand, and we'll ensure you're equipped to get it done right. To get all the electrical supplies you need, visit Robinson Electric at 519 North 13th Avenue or call us at 601-649-1317.
The Eagle Hour, Southern Miss to the top.
Eagle Hour continues on a Friday. Appreciate Bobby Hallford from William Carey University joining us as his Crusaders head back to their second straight World Series in Lewiston, Idaho, play next Friday. Let's go out to the Pete, and as we do, this second segment brought to you every day by Campus Bookmark, the place to go for Golden Eagle swag, located on Hardy Street in Hattiesburg, or online, campusbookmark.net. Southern Miss against Texas State last night, suspended, and weather causing that, lightning causing that in the bottom of the 8th. Golden Eagles trailing 7-5, and was supposed to start at noon today, but now pushed back to 2 o'clock. Let's go to Pete Taylor Park. Bob Getty joined with the purveyor of knowledge, all things Southern Miss baseball, the old left-hander, Jack Duggan. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Well, thanks, Luke. You know, when you need information, you go straight to the top, and that would be where I'm at right now. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, Jack. I'll just ask him this later. I just would like to know the top three obscure things that Jack knows about Southern Miss athletics, but no time to go into that now. Baseball to talk about.
Let's not do that now. I think it'd take me 15 minutes just to come up with something.
All right. So last night, Bob, lightning causing the delay and unable to get it in, and you guys take it over.
Yeah, Jack, you know, sometimes we fuss about lightning. You don't really see lightning, but they'll stop a game. Last night, there was no question it was time to stop the baseball game.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was in the lightning was in the, I think, the 8-mile radius of how they determine when to pull teams from the field. That's an NCAA rule. And then when you get that lightning, that first lightning strike is 30 minutes. You have to staff to stop play, and then within that 30 minutes, if there's another strike, that 30-minute clock starts over. So it's a rule in place for student athlete safety, and so it can be a little bit frustrating sometimes when there's no rain. But it was an interesting weather evening for us last night. We thought we could get it in. You know, we played 2-3 innings in the rain, but finally the lightning got us. And at that time, we felt like, after about an hour, we felt like the best thing was to come back and finish this game today and then try to start game number 2 after that.
But so there was never any question about that the game was going to be called. Once you stopped the game, I assume it was set that you were going to finish the game.
Yeah, that's a league. I mean, the NCAA rule, probably more so a league rule that that you've got to finish the first game before you can start. You got to get the nine innings in before you start the next game. So that's what we've done here, and that's typical college baseball. Pro ball, I think it has kind of gone this way a little bit too. You know, if that had been that was a pro game last night, say 5-6 years ago, you know, if we'd only gotten four innings in, then it would have just been a no contest. But or last night it would have probably been, if they'd have called it, it would have been a win for Texas State. But college is a little bit different, and they like to have the games get played out best they can. And sometimes you see tie games at this level. So hopefully, we don't ever want ties to come in, because there's no ties in baseball, Bob. Yeah. But that's kind of where we are right now.
There's also no crying in baseball yet.
Well, it's not supposed to be.
There's no cheering in Jack's press box either. That's
no, there's definitely no
rule.
Have I thrown you out, Luke? I can't remember.
No. I've never done it. I've just kind of put my head down because there were people in the general direction. Now, there was one game, real quick. There was one game. It was a Tuesday night against UNO 2 years ago. It was me, you, and I think either Andrew Abbedy or Dima in the box. That was it. It was the only people. We score a run in the first, and I went, man, that's good. And you went, no cheering in the press box. And I was like, Jack, look around. No cheering in the press box.
Well, it's when there's people here, then you will know that there's no cheering in the press box. So we keep that rule. We keep that rule for every game.
Jack, I did have a quick question, and then I'll give it back to Bob. For tomorrow, say the rain continues and we don't. How does a doubleheader on travel day affect the schedule?
We haven't had one yet, so I don't know. I haven't really looked at the rules. I don't know if it's two nines or two sevens, but I think it's not going to come into play. I think we got our windows big enough that we're going to get. The conclusion of this first game in, and then another one in after that. That's our goal, and that's what we're set out to do here this afternoon. So hopefully we'll just play one. We can honor our seniors tomorrow before our 1 o'clock game, and we won't have to worry about that. We can put that away for another day.
Luke, are you the reason there's a sign up here that says no grilling in the press box?
Not at all. That's not me. Whatever they serve up there, I gladly take and grab a Coke Zero and sit and enjoy. No George Foreman grill for me.
Yeah, well, that actually happened in another sport. Football, I guess, to be more specific. And that was an interesting day that happened about 6 or 7 years ago. Something in my 30 years that I'd never seen, where I looked down and there were a couple people who, by the way, did not have credentials, were in the press box grilling veggie burgers, as it were. And I had to call campus police to have them excavated, I guess, from the press box.
Well, at least they were eating healthy.
Yeah, they were eating. And maybe that was the thing that had me most upset. Well, they weren't real burgers. Had it been a real burger, I might have asked for one, and we could have kind of worked out some sort of agreement.
Look, I mean, if it was a veggie burger, you could have held two in your hand while you caught that foul ball or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I mean, did the grill have a credential?
No. The grill, there was no grilling. But I'll tell you what, there were fixings for days. I looked at the back wall. There must have been 18 bags of fixings. Now, I don't know what you can put on a veggie burger. But they had plenty of it.
I think you should have thrown out just for eating a veggie burger.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think it's a rule, isn't it?
It should be against the rules if it's not.
Yeah, no veggie burgers.
No veggie burgers.
Jack, we don't believe we're jinxing anything, because we've talked to Travis Creel about this multiple weeks, but can you just put in perspective what Slade Wilkes is doing right now? And then we would be talking about Ozzie Pratt so much if he didn't live in the shadow of Dustin Dickerson, and if he wasn't, in the shadow of a 25-game hitting streak. But, I mean, what those two dudes doing are nuts. Can you just talk about both of them? Start with Slade.
Well, Slade, I tell you what, he's got a professional approach with every at bat. He just comes up there. I think he knows he's got a plan on what he wants to do. He's a guy who's a fourth-year player who he understands the game. He's at that point in his career where, you know, he really, really has just matured as a hitter. And, man, you can just see the growth from his first year to his fourth year. And it's just so – it's gratifying to see him succeed to the level that he has his last year. And you know, the more and more you keep thinking that, you know, he's going to have a really good opportunity to play baseball at the next level. I really hope that that's in the cards for him. Because I tell you what, he is a wonderful baseball player. And, you know, you look at the three games that he played in the outfield, and he had one outfield assist in the three games that he played. So, I tell you what, I will miss his on-field play. I will certainly miss, my interactions with him off the field, which are just always wonderful. And, I tell you what, it comes from a great family, and, he is, to me, he is quintessential Southern Miss baseball, because he is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human being. Now, I'll go over to Ozzie Pratt, who I guess now with an 11-game hitting streak, his last nine games he's got multiple hits, and I would imagine that the baseball is kind of looking like a beach ball to him right now, because he just hits and. You know, we talk about his offense, but, you know, he's been really good defensively as well. And, you know, you look at some of the plays, he's got a great arm over there at short. And I tell you what, if anybody could, you know, step in Dustin Dickerson's shoes, he certainly was the guy to do that. And he has been a great, great addition to this ball club.
He'll give you some colorful interviews too, as a result of Tuesday night.
That's what I've heard. I don't get down there very often, but for post game, because I've got some duties up here. But yes, he's not afraid to speak his mind, is what I understand.
Here's a prediction to both of you guys: Ozzie is not going to be the grand marshal of a parade in Oxford anytime soon.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
Senatobia is a different question, though. He's singing the praises up there. All right, guys, we're about to wrap up this segment, but Jack, so you're confident, or I say that, I mean, it's looking like we'll get the finish of one and play game two today.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. That's what we're shooting for. That's what we hope to do. I know our players are on the field now, loosening up, getting ready. Our scheduled resumption time is 2:02 this afternoon. And then when the first game concludes, we hope to get started in an hour after that.
Bob, what are they serving in the penthouse today?
It looks to me like walk-on.
Yes, I believe buffalo wraps today is the food of choice.
I'm about to sample it, Luke, and I'll send you a text and give you my evaluation.
Please do. Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks.
It's Bob Getty and Jack Duggan live from the Pete Southern Miss, about 29 minutes away from trying to get back and win game one of the series against Texas State. Hey, we're going to move to NFL football. Saints schedule released. We'll go down to New Orleans and talk to Patrick McGee after these commercial messages.
You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour. The Eagle Hour. Southern Miss to the top.
Bob Getty reporting live from Pete Taylor Park. Jack Duggan confident we will get game two in today. And then tomorrow will be a senior day. So Golden Eagles trailing Texas State 7-5. That game will pick up in about 22 minutes. Golden Eagles do have a runner, I believe, on first base. No outs in the bottom of the eighth, trailing 7-5. Third segment of the Eagle Hour brought to you every day by 4th Street Bar and Grill, located on 4th Street in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Premier place to go. And, of course, they'll have Southern Miss baseball on today. If you missed it, catfish fillets, slaw, hush puppies, fries, and a drink. It was only $10.95 today. Excellent lunch, and appreciate Slade White and his crew over at 4th Street Bar and Grill. It's Friday, so let's go down to New Orleans, NOLA.com. Patrick McGee, who is also the president of the Spencer Rattler Fan Club. Patrick, how's your Friday?
Yeah, we had that kind of back and forth during the draft. I, I think drafting a quarterback after the fourth round, the Saints just keep showing it's bound to fail. I think Rattler's more talented than the other guys they've signed, but also think Rattler is like a poor man's Jameis Winston, and he's going to throw 50 interceptions if they put him out there. So that's where I am.
But we can't agree he's faster than Jameis.
Yeah, faster as in runs faster?
I would think so.
Well, I mean, he runs like a 5-flat, Rattler does.
Well, I thought Jameis ran like a 5-6. Anyway.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Oh, well. All right, let's get to the schedule. Matthew Paris, one of your writers for NOLA.com, says it best. This is how he opens his article. By the opponent's record, the New Orleans Saints have, again, one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. But the order of those games makes it anything but a cakewalk. Patrick, you and I were talking off air. The Saints have probably one of the most brutal opening 6 weeks of any team in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, week one against the Panthers, a home game. If any team's kind of facing a must win in week one, it's the Saints, because they've got the Cowboys, going to the Cowboys, host the Eagles, go to Atlanta, you know, then go to Kansas City, and just gosh. I mean, you know, in Tampa in week six, a team that is my favorite to win the NFC South right now. But yeah, that's really tough. And then you host Denver and Sean Payton. You know, I've seen ratings that have the Saints having the easiest or one of the easiest schedules going into the season. But I think it's simply that because the NFC South as a whole is rated low, and you know, you have some dead weight like the Panthers carrying around. So this is a tough schedule. It is not an easy schedule.
So yeah, I mean, let's kind of take it in chunks. Let's, like, those first six games: Carolina at home, at Dallas, Philly at home, at Atlanta, at Kansas City, and then Tampa at home. I mean, so the crossover opponents this year: the NFC East and the AFC West. You feel like Philadelphia was much better than their record. So part of the reason why they're saying, you know, the schedule is easier, is they're just adding up wins and losses, not the potentiality of teams. And so, you know, Philly in week three may be one of the toughest games on the schedule.
Yeah. I mean, Philadelphia is a very talented team. Things went kind of haywire late for them last season, but that's one of the better teams in the NFC, obviously. And, you know, the Cleveland Browns are a playoff team. They're going to have Deshaun Watson back. You know, the Rams, they're going to be a contender in the NFC. It's, you know, the Packers could be very good this year. The back half isn't as difficult as the first half. But, you know, you could dig yourself quite the hole through the first few weeks of the season. And that's, to me, what makes this schedule so tough.
Yeah, that's what, for me, it was. Yeah, after week six, you could start off really slow. And then, you know, oftentimes we see in the NFL, if a team digs a hole, it's just hard sometimes for them to dig it out. All right, the eye-popper on the schedule is week seven. It's a Thursday night prime game. Sean Payton's return to the Super Bowl. To the Superdome. NFL never does anything intentional. We know that. This one was planned and circled. Talk to us about it. Like what that means outside the football game.
Well, I mean, it's the way it's set up. I mean, you're going to be playing on, the Saints are going to be playing on short week, but they do have the benefit of playing at home in that game. But that's just, you know, it's for a lot of Saints fans, it's going to be very surreal to see Sean Payton walk into the Superdome in blue and orange. And it's just, you know, for him, it's got to be weird. It's just, you know, it was going to happen, and here we are looking at it in a primetime setting on Thursday night. It's there's going to be a lot said about it, and when that week rolls around, it's going to be a lot said about Sean Payton, and I think everybody's just going to be ready to get that game over with by the time it arrives. Thank goodness it's on a Thursday as opposed to a Sunday, because that would be a long week for us if they were playing, say, a night game on Sunday or even Monday Night Football.
You can see where it's just going to be a circus. So that game starts the middle six of the schedule. You got to go to the Chargers, and you don't know what the immediate impact Jim Harbaugh is going to have there. You got to go to Charlotte and play Carolina. You get Atlanta at home, and then you get the Browns. And It's at home, but, I mean, yeah, most of the time you would scoff at a Cleveland game, but, I mean, it's a much improved. These middle five, I mean, if 3-2, I mean, but there's a big possibility you might go 2-3 or 1-4.
Yeah, personnel-wise, I think Cleveland Browns are one of the more talented teams in the NFL. They're really good in terms of depth in a lot of different areas. They're going to be a good team. It was a weird season from last year with Joe Flacco getting them into the playoffs, so we'll see. But I mean, the Saints are facing some of the most talented teams in the NFL, including the Browns, including, you know, the Packers. You know, they're getting all it feels like the Saints are getting all the heavyweights to me. I mean, I guess the only team that you're missing out on the schedule are the 49ers, but everybody else, you're really playing very good football teams.
The final six games: L.A. at home, at New York Giants, Commanders of Washington at home, at Green Bay, Las Vegas at home, and then you're at Tampa. And, again, it's just kind of a mixed bag. I mean, you know Sean McVay will have the Rams ready to play. You feel like you should win at New York. What's Jaden Daniels going to do? This is later in the season with Washington. Green Bay is going to be really hard 2 days before
really
Christmas.
Cold. Really,
yeah,
cold.
And really cold. So, I mean, again, it's this last half is extremely difficult. Why is the TBD for the Bucs game the last game of the season?
I think they kind of that's the weekend where they're, you know, it's the last weekend of the season, and they try to set up the games to where they're going on at the same time. You know, in divisional settings, or they're just trying to. So I think most times that final week is a little bit of TBD involved.
So is this a 5-12, more 8-8, more 11-6?
I look at it as kind of 7-10. That's my first response. That just the start's so tough. If you beat the Panthers and pick off, and that to me, if they get out of the first four games 2-2, they're in great shape. You know, that's my. If you beat the Panthers and the Falcons, and you're 2-2 coming out of week four, I think you're just fine. You're in great shape. For one thing, you're 2-0 in the division. But I don't like the Saints' chances. You know, in Dallas, and the Eagles coming in. I think you're going to see a team that kind of responds to really a weird close to last season. I think the Eagles are going to be good. To start the season. So, to me, if the Saints get out of week four and they're 2-2 going to Kansas City, they're going to be okay, you know, because they're not going to beat the Chiefs in Kansas City, but they can turn around and beat Tampa in New Orleans the next week. So, if the Saints are 3-3 after week six, you know, going into that big game against the Broncos, the Saints are in a great spot.
I wouldn't think 7-10 would get Dennis Allen another year. What is it? What does it take this year?
So. I think they have to get just a playoff bid. I think as long as the Saints get to the playoffs, Dennis Allen's fine.
So when this schedule, in the few days the schedule has been released, or I guess in the last 24 hours, has there been more optimism, or it may not be enough time to read it, or pessimism that this is Allen's last year?
I think there's more pessimism. I didn't see any Saints fan look at the schedule and be excited. Oh, yeah, we got this. They're just... I saw somebody joking or whatever. The Giants apparently sent gifts to all their season ticket holders and got one. The Saints fans responded, and yet we have to deal with Dennis Allen for a full season. So, there's not a whole lot of optimism. You don't feel a lot of buzz around this team right now, and it will, you know, as training camp fires up and everything. But I think this summer is going to be kind of a quiet one for Saints fans because they're just going to kind of. Just kind of grumble and say, we got to deal with this again. It's going to just be the same thing all over again. But,
yeah,
we'll see.
Last thing, it's just really tough. I mean, because you love the players. You love the younger players, and you love Cam Jordan and DeMario Davis. And it's just hard to have that, you know, love-hate relationship with the players and with the coach.
Yeah. I mean, the Saints fans have been juggling that for a bit. They love to hate Dennis Allen and often love to hate Derek Carr.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, Patrick, have a great weekend. Thanks for your expertise.
Okay, thanks, guys.
It's Patrick McGee of NOLA.com. Saints schedule released yesterday. It's tougher than what it looks. Dennis Allen, a lot to do in the 2024 season. We'll step aside and be back for our final segment of the week as the Eagle Hour continues from the Southern Bancorp Studios in Laurel and Hattiesburg.
Robinson Electric Supply in Laurel is a wholesaler and distributor that has been powering our community for over 20 years. With everything from conduits to tape, tools to home automation devices, if you can think of it, we supply it. All you need to do is talk us through the project at hand, and we'll ensure you're equipped to get it done right. To get all the electrical supplies you need, visit Robinson Electric at 519 North 13th Avenue or call us at 601-649-1317.
Southern Miss to the top. To the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Final segment of the week. Luke Johnson, Michael Mergens from the Southern Bancorp Studios in Hattiesburg and Laurel for segment of the Eagle Hour every day, brought to you by DBAT and DBATHattiesburg.com. DBAT located on Hardy Street in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Great place to get instruction, practice, batting cages in shape, and then everything you need to compete at the highest level in the pro shop. DBAT and DBATHattiesburg.com, proud sponsor of the Eagle Hour. Southern Miss junior women's golfer Momoko Ando named second team All Sunbelt Conference. She joins four other Lady Eagles to be named to multiple All Conference teams at least twice. Fifth player in program history to do that. She turned in this season the lowest single season individual stroke average in program history, averaging just a shade under 73 per round. That basically broke the program record by almost half a stroke that she actually set last year. So Momoko Ando, the Tokyo, Japan native, second team All Sunbelt Conference. Congratulations to her. Outdoor track and field is going to send 12 different Golden Eagles in 13 events to the NCAA East Regional, which is next week, May 22nd through 25th, in Lexington, Kentucky. On the women's side, Jada McDougal qualified for the 100 and 200 meters. Trinity Benson qualified for the 400 meters. Trinity Flager, Jada McDougal, Sevilla Varner, and Trinity Benson will compete in the 4x100. 4x400, Trinity Benson, Jada McDougal, Addison McLaren, and Sevilla Varnell. In the high jump, Jaleesa Alexander and Elena Simon, and triple jump, Zaisha Fraser. On the men's side, Warren Williams qualified for the 110 hurdles. JaVale Fullerton qualified for the 400-meter hurdles. Zaina Palomino and Tyler Nichols qualified for the high jump. DeAndre Ward will compete in the long jump. Pierce Cameron will throw the shot put, and Kaya Ludgood will throw the hammer. Next week, May 22nd through 25th, NCAA East Regional set for Lexington, Kentucky. In baseball last night in the Sun Belt, App State defeats Georgia Southern 6-5 in 10 innings. ULM defeats Arkansas State 12-4. Coastal Carolina knocks off Marshall 6-3. Old Dominion defeats Georgia State 6-4. James Madison, a little upset here in Troy, Alabama, knocks off the Trojans 14-10. Louisiana and South Alabama suspended in the bottom of the sixth. The Cajuns were up 6-4. Looks like they will try to get underway a little later today. And, of course, the Golden Eagles trail Texas State in the bottom of the eighth, 7-5. I'll come back to the Golden Eagles game in just a moment. Updated conference standings. Troy now 17-11. If the Golden Eagles were to lose today, they would still be a game ahead. If they were to win, they would be two games ahead. James Madison now one game back of Troy. App State a game and a half back. Georgia Southern 16-13. Coastal is 15-14. A lot to shake out here the last weekend in Sunbelt play. Looking back last night, so the way the game stood, Texas State got out to a 7-1 lead on the Golden Eagles. Billy Oldham got knocked around last night, gave up five runs in his pitching performance. Cameron Bush, on the other hand, for Texas State, threw five innings, gave up seven hits, and only gave up one run. It was when McCafferty, the reliever for Texas State, came in. He gave up four runs. Golden Eagles, like I said, trailed trailed 7-1 and didn't really get on the board until the bottom of the fifth, and then the bottom of the sixth And the bottom of the seventh is when they scored the runs. Pato scored in the bottom of the sixth on a Matthew Russo single. Stockman and Russo scored on a double by McIntyre. And then in the bottom of the seventh, Slade Wilkes scored when Davis Gillespie doubled down the right field line. So this game's not over yet. Ozzie Pratt, 3-for-4. Slade Wilkes, 2-for-4. Davis Gillespie, 2-for-4. And the way it stands right now, Seth Smith will be up in the bottom of the eighth. The count should be 1-1. There is a runner on first base. I believe it's Lawson Odom. And Seth Smith, I think, is pinch hitting for Broadus, if I'm remembering correctly and I'm reading Jack's box score correctly. But Josh Ott came in the game and threw two innings of shutout baseball with four strikeouts. So Golden Eagles had the tying run at the plate, and that game should pick up here in about a minute and a half. So we'll see what happens. Game two will follow about 45 minutes after the conclusion of game one. So Golden Eagles trying to get a win, pick up another win today, and then hopefully go for the sweep tomorrow on Senior Day. Great week on the Eagle Hour, and we'll have a special show Monday. And then set our sights towards Montgomery, but we'll have to wait and see what the Golden Eagles do this weekend, what happens in the rest of the Sun Belt, to know where the Golden Eagles will be seated next week in Montgomery. As always, we appreciate you listening to and joining us. Always remember, Eagle Hour can be found in podcast form, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Audible. If you're in the Hub City and need a new car, go see our friends at Genesis in Hattiesburg. Get some good beignets over the weekend, too, at Mo Bay Beignet on Hardy Street. That's going to wrap it up. We'll catch you Monday. As always, Southern Miss.
To the top.
Into the future. I want to fly like an eagle to the sea.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.